The Andrew Peach Show. BBC.
8:42, Saturday morning with Andrew, live till 10 this morning. Before 9, we're going to sort out your technology. There's all sorts of tech that we're using much more of. Great, we've done so much of this in our house. It's because we've got more time, isn't it? We've been hearing how much TV we've been watching, so we've been doing a lot more streaming, a lot more joining the laptop up to the big screen to watch things that way. We've talked on this programme in recent weeks about storing your photos, getting those all sorted out. We've talked about antivirus software, all sorts. Whatever you want to know about technology, call us now, 0808 100 5100. Fevzi Turkalp, our gadget detective, has the answers. Morning, Fevzi.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. Let's start with our gadget of the week, which is it's a smartphone. So a lot of people are thinking about, you know, what's the right smartphone for me? Tell me about the one you found.
Right. This one's pretty special because it comes from Google themselves. So Google are the people who produce the Android operating system, which is the single most common operating system on smartphones now. But usually Android handsets are made by others. But once a year, Google makes a flagship phone called the Pixel. So the current flagship from Google is the Pixel 4. But when they've done that, they then go on and produce one with an A on the end of it to say this has got a lot of the good stuff in there, but it's kind of more affordable. So they've just announced the Google Pixel 4a. And I say announced because actually it goes on pre-order in 10th of September. Can't actually buy one till the 1st of October. So I've had one of these for a couple of weeks to test. So it's a Google Pixel 4a, and it's a sort of upper mid-range smartphone. It's £350, and I'll tell you now that I think it's probably the best smartphone at anywhere near that price.
Wow, okay. Because that's the sort of money that's going to be relatively common to pay, isn't it, for a smartphone? You're not talking top end at £350, perhaps ridiculously, no, but that's the sort of money that a lot of people are going to spend on a phone.
Yeah. You can spend £1,500 on a top-end iPhone, for example, and not much less than that for a top-end Android phone. So this is, I wouldn't say it's budget because it's £350, but what Google have done with this is to try and take all the best bits of the flagship phone and put them in there. They obviously had to chop some things out, but what they've done really well this year is the things that they've chopped out are not the essential things, whereas the things that they've left in are. So the camera, for example, in there is the same as one of the cameras in the flagship phone. It is an excellent camera, particularly for stills. For video, it's okay, but for still shots, if that's your thing, and it will do, obviously it will do video, but for still shots, I think it's probably the best camera phone for under about £600.
Wow.
And this is about three. So if that's your thing, you know, don't have to think twice. You get a flagship quality camera inside a phone where you're not paying flagship prices. So I think that's a big takeaway. They've also, from going from the 3A to the 4A, they've managed to increase the size of the screen. It's now 5.8-inch screen, but reduce the size of the phone. And they've done that by making the bezels, the area around the screen, almost disappear. So it's, you know, they've done well. Now, the other thing that's important to know about Google phones is they run what's called stock Android. And what that means is they run Android in its purest form. When you get a Samsung phone or a phone from another manufacturer, they make their version of Android, which first of all can sometimes tend to slow the thing down, and you know, you get all this stuff that you don't need because all these manufacturers feel the need to differentiate their Android from everyone else's. Not necessarily good for the consumer. But the other thing is, once they've done that, you're reliant upon Samsung or Sony or whoever it is to carry on supporting your particular phone with new versions of the Android operating system that they then modify. And with some Android phones, it's ridiculous. You know, you barely get more than a year of updates. But sometimes some phones never get an update. What Google have done here is they've guaranteed updates for at least 3 years. And often it will be more than that. So the phone will not become redundant definitely within that time because it will get security and other updates. And it runs better because it hasn't got all that other stuff sort of that the other people built into it. The battery life is good. It's got a fingerprint sensor on the back. I'm minded to say it's got a headphone socket, which is an increasingly rare beast on smartphones these days. And there are reasons.
Yeah, that's annoying, isn't it? Certainly on Apple products, the fact that there's no proper headphone socket is in no way a good thing.
It is, because you can, although you can, get an adapter and plug it into the Lightning port at the bottom. The thing is, then it becomes more difficult to charge it and use headphones at the same time. Now, also, Google are pushing ahead with AI big time in their software, and we know that the Google Assistant, for example, in this is much smarter, allows you to control more aspects of the phone by voice. But there's one app in it that I really like. It's called the Recorder app. It not only allows you to record voice notes, but it then transcribes them on the phone itself into English text. Yeah, so your speech is transcribed into English, and then it is searchable. So all your voice notes are searchable by voice. So you can look for a word in your notes somewhere where you said Andrew Peach, for example, and you can find it. So that's really clever, and it's an example of what Google are doing with AI as well. Things that it doesn't have, I said it cut out a few things or didn't put them in. 5G. 5G is not in this phone. It's not in any of the Pixels at the moment.
But then 5G is a long time away, isn't it?
Well, yes, and I was going to say, in particular, because of the government's recent announcement not to use Huawei, that's generally thought to put 5G back about 2 years in this country. So I think that unless, you're particularly... I mean, there will be a 5G version of this phone, I think, later on. So if you must have it, you can wait and get that. But for most people, I don't think it's going to be a big deal, because the rollout will be delayed. It will be slower and more expensive, I dare say, as well, because of the exclusion of Huawei. Also, no wireless charging, not a big deal in my opinion. It's not water resistant per se. The thing that I wasn't very happy, there's no expandable storage in it, which is, of course, true of every iPhone anyway, but some Google phones or some Android phones have it. So, but all in all, I've given it 4 stars out of 5. I just think it's, if you're up for an Android phone, certainly, there's not really much to touch it for that price, in my opinion. So I've given it 4 stars out of 5, but just bear in mind, you can go online and learn about it. You can't pre-order till the 10th of September. You can't get one till the 1st of October.
0808 100 5100. If you've got anything to ask about choice of smartphone or tablet, a lot of people investing in these bits of kit at the moment. We've talked before about laptops, photo storage, streaming technology, things like Zoom, FaceTime, those kind of bits of software that help you keep in touch with people, perhaps for work, perhaps for family confabs. 0808 100 5100, whatever you want to know about technology, Fevzy has the answers. Back onto that thing about the lack of headphone sockets on phones these days. I've always used the headphone socket to connect my phone in the car. I haven't got a... There's probably a sort of wire-free wireless version of this that most new cars would have, but my car doesn't have that. So I've always just had like a cable that plugs into the headphone socket. Now I've got a phone that doesn't have a headphone socket. I can't plug my phone into the car speakers, as far as I can tell anyway. Is there a way of doing that?
Well, for a lot of phones, you can get an adapter. So, for example, on Apple phones, the Lightning connector does have audio out on it, but it needs an adapter to allow you to connect it to headphones or analog audio, but it is possible to do that. The other way of doing it is where you would normally have plugged in the device into the car, you can put a Bluetooth adapter at that end.
And then do a
Bluetooth connection. But it's a pain, because Apple's kind of known for pushing the boundaries on getting rid of sockets. In fact, there is a rumor that next year that the iPhone may not even have a charging socket, because the EU has said everyone must use USB-C, and Apple can't really make money out of non-proprietary sockets like USB-C. So the rumour is they're going to get rid of it altogether and rely on wireless charging. But wireless charging isn't really there yet as a technology. It's slower and inefficient in terms of the amount of energy it wastes. there is this constant push to do it. If you get rid of the headphone socket, it allows you a little bit more space inside to do something else. Also makes it easier to waterproof the phone because you've got, you know, fewer ports where water can ingress. But it, you know, it's always this balance between, you know, pushing the envelope. I remember when Apple got rid of the headphone socket, Phil Schiller, I think he called it courageous. I mean, right. I think most of us had another word for it, actually.
Annoying.
But that's a kinder word, yes. Sometimes you've got to get rid of things to make change, but sometimes that transitional period is a bit painful. And I think also for people who use their phones as, video cameras, again, having a headphone socket is really useful to be able to monitor the audio and so forth. So a lot of people, a lot of mobile journalists, it's called Mojo Mobile Journalism. A lot of people are using their smartphones to shoot pieces to camera for journalistic reason. Some people have even shot feature films on their smartphones now. They can be that good. It's at the level now where you can actually do some really remarkable things.
Clever stuff.
Yeah, but it's just a shame that we're losing headphone sockets in that.
Where's the best place to store your photos? Because it's like a moving feast, this. Is the best place to store your photos on your phone, on the laptop, on an SD card, in the cloud? What would you say in terms of, having some hope that your photos might always be there and available to you?
Yeah, so there's no one best place. By definition, a backup has to be in a different location, or at least one of them has to be in a different location. They say three backups in two locations, I think. So obviously you store them in your phone, that's fine, but at some point you're going to have to clear them out of your phone, although I noticed my phone has now reached 10,000 photos on the phone and a few hundred video clips as well, so that's not... That's not ideal, but that's a form of
13,479 on mine. I'm just looking at it now.
Well, there you go. So obviously backing them up onto a computer of some sort, probably a laptop or a desktop computer. So that's a good idea, but that again is not enough, because if your phone is sitting next to your computer and God forbid they're both stolen or there's a house fire or a flood, it's possible to lose the phone and the backup. So then you need to back up again in another location. Now, that can be backing up to an external drive and giving it to someone to keep it safely for you, having encrypted it, or it can be cloud storage. So again, if you're an Apple user, you've got access to something called iCloud. You get, I think, 5 gigabytes free, and after that you pay. And you can set it up so that even every time you take a photo, it automatically gets uploaded to iCloud as well. If you remember a few years ago when a lot of celebrities had their personal photos hacked, that was how it was done. Their iCloud accounts were hacked. So the phones themselves were not hacked, but the iCloud was hacked. So it's pros and cons. If you put the photos out of your reach, i.e. on a cloud backup, then that's just one more place that they could be stolen from. What I would recommend people do is actually encrypt their photos. That's to say, scramble the files that the photos live within before sending it up there. So even if someone were to then break into your cloud storage account, it doesn't have to be iCloud, there's all sorts that you can use. Even if they were to break into that, what they'll get is gobbledygook. They won't get your photos, and don't trust them to just encrypt it themselves. You encrypt it yourself. They can encrypt it as well if they want to afterwards, but you do it and then you hold the keys to that. And if you use proper encryption, then even if it's taken, it's not really counted as having been compromised, because they can't get into it.
We're talking last week about the Hoover, the robot Hoover that goes around all the time and is keeping your house relatively clean. You have to do it a little bit yourself, as well, you were saying. But how do you know with technology like that, or the similar mower, where you can set it off and get it all done automatically? How do you know when the right moment is to buy something like that? Because the technology improves all the time. The price often comes down as time goes on. So how do you find the sweet spot of the moment to think, now is the time to buy that?
It kind of depends on the individual, what your tolerance is of having to, you know, be an early adopter and have the benefits. If you go early, you have benefits of that technology. If you wait later, you get it, cheaper and arguably better. You can kind of tell. I mean, robot vacuum cleaners have been around for a long time. They are still improving, but in some senses, improvements now are more incremental. They tend to be more to do with the app and the communications and so forth, and the smarts, if you like. So I personally, the way I view robot vacuum cleaners now, it depends on, you know, your expectations, but the way I use one is in conjunction with a normal one. So I have the robot vacuum cleaner trundling around, terrifying the pets or providing them with rides around the kitchen. Every day of the week, there's a schedule and it just goes off and does that. And it keeps the place spick and span. And once a week, I do a vacuum with a conventional cleaner. And I have to do something anyway, because robot vacuum cleaners don't do stairs. And as I have steps, you know, I need to do something.
You've got to be cleaned at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, these are small devices. They're about the size of a sort of 12-inch pizza and less than 3 inches tall, and very often. So they have the benefits of, you know, being able to go under beds and furniture and things like that. And just, they're kind of fastidious. They work out, you know, where the boundaries of the room are, and they cover everywhere in the room. And there's a lot to be said for that. But, you know, something of that, those dimensions, you're not going to get the same suction power and the same beating of carpets as you do with the standard one. So I think it's also a case of, you know, setting your expectations and understanding that, you know, sometimes, you know, it's going to do some things, but not to expect too much of them.
Is it more about the fun of owning it in the end? I don't know.
No, I think they are fun to own, actually. And you only need to look at YouTube of people who somehow their cats seem to sit on them and enjoy riding around them. There's something very special about that. I can't really quite explain it. And I don't recommend you do that to anyone, because, you know, the pet may be distressed, but a lot of cats seem to enjoy it, strangely. But I think they're genuinely useful. And they are at the point where they're genuinely useful. I think that in the past they may have been more gimmick. They are useful now. But then again, you're spending even for a sort of decent mid-range model, you're spending about £300.
Yeah.
So I think, but I do think they're useful, and I think, you know, the home is cleaner as a result of it. Unless you've got someone, you know, vacuuming your floor every day, then clearly it's going to take care of the little spillages and so forth, and that's, you know, that has to be a good thing.
Interesting. Fevzi, thank you very much. Fevzi Torkarp, our gadget detective. Thanks to him, you can go and look him up on Twitter if you'd like to connect directly.